The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome to Happy Hour. We had our, before we turned on the recording, we had a nice little kind of check-in. We're around the planet here, which is, I don't know, touches my heart. It really does. And even a number of people within the Bay Area, but we have from all over the Bay Area too. So we have, for those of you who don't know, even maybe I'll just tell this little story. There was a time when I lived in San Francisco and I would go visit my family, which is in the East Bay, kind of like the far East Bay, and 50 miles away from San Francisco. So 50 miles, you know, would take me a little bit more than an hour to drive there. In the summer, it would be 50 degrees warmer, and just driving a little bit of an hour would be like just so different. So just to give a taste of here in the Bay Area, that there's the weather is really different, even though we might be really close to one another. Depends if you get the effect of the Pacific or the Bay. But probably you did not sign on to Happy Hour to talk about weather. So I wanted to continue on this theme about the inner critic. So this inner voice that shows up on occasion, and for some people it's pretty often, and it has this perspective that whatever we do is not enough, or who we are is somehow inadequate, or there's a just a feeling of never enough, maybe even like failure, even though by some objective measurements, there's not a failure, but we might feel that, this sense of, yeah, okay, I accomplished all this, I did all these things, but somehow I still feel like it's just not enough, I have to do more. This inner critic, it can really be like kind of this tyrannical and harsh and just awful. So one thing I wanted to point out is that the inner critic, it has this quality of being kind of closed. Like it's certain, it knows how things are, and it doesn't need any more data or doesn't even need anything extra. It's just the way that it is. And it has this dogmatic quality to it. And in contrast, we might say just an inner voice, it's not the critic, but a voice is more open and curious. Yeah, what is going on? Well, what's happening? As opposed to, it's like this, dang it. And don't bother me with any facts. This is just the way it is. So this kind of like inner critic versus inner voice, so this feeling of having a little bit more openness, which implicit in that is also a sense of flexibility, that maybe things could be a little bit different or could behave a little bit different or something like this. So this is part of what meditation practice is to help this more open and curious mindset or mind state arise and be readily available to us when we need it. And in fact, we can even shift our inner voice so it becomes less and less the inner critic and more this voice or mind state, I'll just use that expression, to be open and curious. So I'm going to do some loving kindness practice. We'll do this together today, a little bit of compassion practice. But what are some other things that we might do to support that? And one is to pay attention to our, maybe I'll use this word, like setting or surroundings or like environment or atmosphere. And more specifically, I can say about that is sometimes social media is all about, you know, they have this highly curated portrayal of something that might look fantastic or it might look all terrible, you know, whatever it is, whatever the source is, but it tends to be kind of one end of the extreme. There isn't like a mixture often. I'm making gross generalizations, about other people who are making gross generalizations, but I just want to highlight to be aware of this, because social media and television often can really skew our, I'm going to use this word, kind of the atmosphere or the environment, the surroundings, the settings in which we are, and that encourages kind of this closed, certain, dogmatic, I'm inadequate and that's the way it is kind of feeling, as opposed to an open, curious, and investigative mind state. And so there's this quote from James Clear. Some of you may know he's this author of the book Atomic Habits, which has been a really runaway bestseller, I think, if I remember correctly. And he has this quote that was really important, or really, I think, is something to pay attention to. He says, it's not necessary to change a person in order to change their behavior. Just change their environment. And I can attest this is true. I moved, now it's been a few years ago, but when I moved, all of a sudden, I just picked up some good habits that I've been meaning to do, but somehow with the move, I just was easier to do. So there's a way in which we have, you know, big changes in our environment, but some of these little ones too. So just paying attention to what we are consuming and filling our minds and our atmosphere, our environment with, that's one. Here's another one. Look, if you're indoors, look out windows, or like to get a bigger view, to literally have a bigger view. If you're outside, kind of look up and look around. There's some way in which this impacts us to literally have a bigger view, helps us to kind of like let go of this really constricted, tight view of I'm inadequate, I'm a failure, or whatever it might be, which is just a view, right? To be clear, that's only a view. It's not the truth, but it's a view that somehow we're believing and it has some authority. And there's, we can open up the view by literally changing the view, looking bigger. So those are two things we can do, is pay attention to our setting, our environment, look at big views, and probably you don't need me to tell you this, but to spend time in nature or with pets too, right? Maybe just playing with pets or with nature. Both of those have a way of, I don't know, kind of feeding us, nourishing us, in a way that doesn't have to be complicated. It's just nourishing. And I mean, yes, Marie Christine and Bodhi, right? Yes, Marie Christine put the little heart, and she's there with her furry family member. So I just offer these as some ways to kind of like shift our mind state, or shift it from an inner critic to just the inner voice, which has hopefully some more wisdom and some more flexibility in it. And then, of course, some loving kindness and compassion practice, which we're going to do now. Okay, so we'll start with a little bit of mindfulness practice. So just bringing attention to the sensations in the body. Feeling free to wiggle a little bit if it feels like that would be helpful. Way to work out some of the kinks, so to speak. To notice, what is it like to be present at this moment? What are the physical sensations? What is being heard? The sounds. And as best we can we allow them to be there? Unless it's abundantly clear that it'd be better if you sat with an extra cushion or something. There's no reason to be uncomfortable with our sitting posture. And then to bring our attention to the sensations of breathing. And feeling the movement of the chest, the belly, or the air going in and out of the nose. Right now, there's nothing else that needs to be done. I'm just here noticing the sensations of breathing. When the mind wanders, we don't have to make it a problem. It doesn't mean that we are a bad meditator. All it means is that we are a meditator. We're meditating. That's all it means. We just begin again. And just a reminder, you can always come back to this practice. If it ever feels like it's would be supportive rather than loving kindness or compassion practice. Sometimes with loving kindness and compassion, the opposite of loving kindness and compassion can show up and can feel overwhelming. This is not unusual. If that does happen for you, you can come back to mindfulness practice or maybe go to an easier loving kindness practice. But to begin our loving kindness practice, we'll begin where it's easy, bringing to mind a lovable being. It might be the furry family member. Maybe it's somebody in your life that you just have this inner smile or inner happiness that arises, delight maybe is the word, that arises when you bring them to mind. Maybe it's an author or teacher or leader that's inspiring. And connecting with this lovable being. Maybe bring to mind some of their lovableness. Maybe it doesn't have to be words or clear or distinct. Or maybe it is. Maybe there is something specific that they have done or they do. the point is to connect with a little bit of appreciation or respect or care or warmth. And as a support for cultivating loving kindness for the lovable being, we can say these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Connecting with this lovable being. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. then to expand this loving kindness, this warm heartedness, expand it to include ourselves. Maybe it's less turning toward ourselves and more just expanding the sphere of loving kindness, the bubble of it, and including ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And we have some warmth and care and respect for ourselves in the same way that we do for the lovable being. sometimes the inner critic shows up when there's a little bit of difficulties or a little bit of uncomfortableness. It's a habitual response to blame ourselves. We can start to shift that with some compassion practice for ourselves. So for that practice, bring to mind something that's a little bit uncomfortable in your life. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 2 or a 3. Just something really mild. We always start here. Bringing this mild irritant to mind. And we say this phrase, may this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. If that difficulty or irritant is no longer compelling, maybe there's another one you can bring to mind. Also keeping them really mild. Working with something mild is very powerful. We shouldn't underestimate it. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. Kindness towards ourselves. Kindness towards others. So this idea of shifting the inner critic, one way is to introduce some more openness or some curiosity, and loving kindness practice and compassion practice is a great way to do that. Because I also talked about like shifting the environment, what we look at, whether it's nature or some social media that just doesn't really support some inner well-being. There's a way in which loving kindness practice and any meditation practice really is changing the inner environment, so that there's a way in which there's a little bit more, less dogmatic, I should say, more, what's the opposite of dogmatic, flexible or open, easygoing or something like that. So these are some of the things that we can work with, this inner critic, which is so prevalent. And I think these days, like after having been through the pandemic and, you know, there's just like, it just feels like there's this one thing after another for years now. I think having that kind of environment allows the inner critic to just get really loud and start to feel like everything is not quite right. And it can really have a debilitating effect on ourselves. So coming here to Happy Hour and doing some of this practice is a way to like get nourished and supported and maybe help shift kind of this inner environment, you might say. Okay, so now I'd like to put you into some breakout rooms so you have an opportunity to talk about this with other people. And these breakout rooms are an opportunity to like kind of like extend your loving kindness practice and compassion practice in with some actual beings. So put it into practice. So in these groups, it's nice to just say one thing at a time or make one point rather than everything you know, rather than thinking you have to educate or inform or advise others. It's more we're just sharing a little bit about what's going on, how we experienced the breakout group, I'm sorry, the meditation. And so you can just say one thing and let it go to the next person. They say one thing, and then it goes to the third person. They say one thing, and then it comes back around to you. And then maybe you've been influenced or allowing yourself to be touched by what you heard from others. So just in the same way that the inner critic kind of is closed down and doesn't want to hear from anybody else, and part of the way to soften or diminish the inner critic is to open up. So in the same way, allow yourself to open and to hear what others are saying in a way that allows them to feel like they've been seen, but also while we're taking care of ourselves too, right? We're not going to allow us to be unduly or inappropriately affected by what happens in the groups, hopefully, right? So let's go in the order of the last digit of your phone number, if that's helpful. And here we go. Okay, welcome back. Welcome back. Does anybody have a comment or a question or something they'd like to share? This idea of the inner critic and introducing some openness as a way, and changing our environment is one way to do that.
I think my screen went wild. Oh, I see what it is. I reversed. This is terrible. Sorry, I'm using my iPad, and there are all little funny little spots up there. One of the things we were talking about in our group was that, personally, in the concept works better for me of being many critics, that there isn't one critic, there's many critics, and that they're all critics, experiences of the past laid down in neural pathways that are operating and flipping back and forth on the event. But the idea that there's many different sources of that critic. So it takes different approaches to deal with the critic.
Thank you. That's a great point. It can be like a whole constellation, right? A whole collection of
a family.
Yeah. All kinds of things. Thank you, Terry. Thank you for highlighting that. It's not like there's just one kind of monolithic inner critic that came from one particular source or something like that. Thank you. Yeah, it can be really helpful to think about that. Neil.
Can you talk about how providing compassion for little things, you know, right, can be so super powerful?
Yeah. Maybe I should say that maybe the secret ingredient to being compassionate for little things, first of all, I'll say it's easier, right? So we're more likely to do it, and we're more likely to get some positive feedback, like, oh, okay, I can do that. So it is, it kind of helps our confidence. But what maybe the secret ingredient is of time. Like if we just are a little bit more compassionate for ourselves and we do that repeatedly over time, makes a huge difference, just like compounding interest or something like this, right? So we don't get a big bang right at the beginning, but there's time that really helps us. And probably a lot of us know this, right? Just a little 1% improvement, again and again and again, right? That really can make a big difference over time. So, and so maybe that's one thing. And then I'll say the cost of trying to working with things that are more difficult is that it's difficult to stay kind of like compassionate for that. We might fall off and start to get lost and, well, yeah, I should have said that, or they shouldn't have done that. And next time this happens, you know, we just start slipping right onto something else. And then it feels like a kind of a lost opportunity to continue our loving kindness or our compassion practice. Does that help, Neil?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Peggy.
As a segue from that, do we ever grow into working with the bigger ones a little bit? or no?
So I will say yes. But what okay. this is what happens is often is we'll start with a little one. And then it'll just, and a big one will arise just in the mind. And we just are able to hold that without it having to be something really complicated or something really big. It's just naturally this, the growth of, or the magnitude of the difficulty just naturally gets bigger and bigger. Often, but we start with the simple. And then when I mean start with the simple, like maybe in the very first meditation period, oh, this cushion that I'm sitting on isn't quite right. May I hold this with kindness and ease? And then, oh yeah, that relationship with my boss, may I hold this with kindness and ease? And it just gets held with kindness and ease. So even though it's more difficult. Was that helpful, Peggy?
Yeah, I think so. I was saying in my group that twos, I can't think of any. I don't know if they don't register. And I think what might be happening is I've gradually started holding them throughout the few years I've been doing this, maybe.
Fantastic.
So they pass pretty quickly, maybe.
Fantastic. So you're ready for three.
But I'm left with, yeah, fives, four, five, sixes.
That's great. That's great. I'm happy to hear it.
I hope so. Thanks.
And maybe I'll say that I'm saying a two and a three because, of course, it's just human nature. We want to do the eight, nines, and tens, right? The things that are the most painful. But those are also the most difficult and where we're least likely to get success when we're just moving right into it. So I'm saying twos and threes to kind of counteract people's ideas that they should do eights, nines, tens, and elevens, right? So. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for your practice. And I'll see you guys all next week. And if you'd like to unmute, we can all say goodbye together. So bye-bye and thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Eileen.
Night, Neil.
Bye, Fran.
Nice to see you.
Bye. Bye-bye.